White Rocket Entertainment, podcast number 532.
You are listening to the AU Wishbone, almost credible sports discussion on the White Rocket Entertainment Network.
Bye-bye, Bo! Touchdown, Auburn!
The kick is good! Auburn wins! Shivers just ran through a man! Touchdown, Auburn!
Hello and welcome to the AU Wishbone, brought to you by White Rocket Entertainment in association with TheWarEagleReader.com. People like you, the Auburn family, the AU Wishbone family, our very own Patreon.com family. I'm Van Allen Plexico, and I'm joined tonight, as always, by my co-host.
I'm John Ringer.
Well, John, we're really into the dead period, except for, I guess, we're getting ready for A-Day, right? So we have a little bit of football to talk about tonight, and then a little bit of basketball news to talk about.
Yeah, a little bit each. A little more off-season discussion of both.
More than I expected for either one, honestly. And honestly, right now, the basketball news is probably bigger, but we'll get to that in just a minute. Most of our listeners want to hear about football, although I think it's changing. I think it's slowly. Let me ask you that. Just off the top of my head, this occurs to me. What do you think is Auburn's current relationship with the round ball sport? I mean, it used to be that we, you know, as a group, we liked basketball, and we had the great 80s teams, the very good 80s teams. We had Charles Barkley we could point to, but not a lot after that period. So it feels like we're in a different world now, doesn't it? What do you think about Auburn's relationship to basketball?
I think we are in a different world. I think Pearl has elevated the basketball program to a point where it is not something to do in the off season, as we would have said about basketball a long time ago. It's its own great thing, and I'm very excited about it. And I think there are plenty of people who are, you know, kind of Auburn basketball fans now, and maybe care more about that than football. I think that's fair to say. There's a lot of people like that. So I'm excited about the basketball program, and I think we're in great shape there. And I think there, you know, are people who are plenty interested in that and interested enough in it to listen to us talk about it in, you know, middle of April.
Yeah, I think it skews younger too, and certainly among the current students.
Yes.
I mean, if you're a student at Auburn right now, you know, you have to be a hardcore football fan not to be probably at least as excited about basketball, because you're living through Auburn's golden age in basketball right now. And you're not living through Auburn's golden age in football exactly. So, although maybe we're at the beginning of it, you never know. So, and certainly we've had our moments in the recent past. But yeah, I get the sense it's kind of generational. I think the older fans are like, "Oh, cool, we have a good basketball team for a while. How cool, that's very nice." Whereas the younger ones are like, "We're a basketball school now, woo!" And I'm like, "No, we're not. We," and in fact, I'll go ahead and bump this up since I mentioned it. I was going to mention in the basketball segment, but let me go ahead and say this. I firmly believe, and I don't want this to make anybody mad or sad or anything like that, but I honestly, and I hope I'm wrong, but I firmly believe we will never experience this again, at least in our lifetimes. I think that the stars had to line up just right to get Bruce Pearl to come here. I think if he had never had that barbecue, he would be coaching at Kansas or UCLA or one of those right now, one of those programs. I think that's where he would be if he'd never had those run-ins with the rules. And I think that we just happened to get lucky enough that he did something that was considered just bad enough to get him out of the sport for a couple of years, but not bad enough that Jay Jacobs wouldn't take a chance on him. You know what I mean? It's like he had to hit in just that little Goldilocks zone where it wasn't too bad, but it wasn't too easy. Just right there in that zone for us to be able to get him. And I'm sorry to report this. We are not a basketball school. We will never be a basketball school. And we are never going to get, if Bruce Pearl, God forbid, should leave us for a bigger school or something tomorrow, we would not be able to replace him with anybody close to his ability.
No. And again, like, you know, it's not like Bruce Pearl got caught on tape to the FBI arranging a payment for a player.
Who would do that? Right, yeah.
Will Wade. But,
Well, the comparison I had is Bruce Pearl doing what he's doing at Auburn right now is like if Nick Saban had been at the Miami Dolphins, right, and then gotten in some kind of NCAA trouble and ended up coaching at Missouri. It would be the greatest period of football. Yeah, right?
No, I appreciate this example because you're insulting both Alabama and Missouri.
Okay. So it would be considered the greatest period in Missouri football history. Everybody would know that Missouri was awesome and he was kicking butt. And they would also know that the minute he left, Missouri would go back to being Missouri. They would not be able to hire another Nick. They wouldn't be able to bring in Dabo Swinney or Jimbo or anybody like that to follow him. It's like you got him because things just worked out perfectly that you got him. You're not going to be able to get another one like that. And I mean, you know, the only hope that I hold out is that he can stay long enough to establish enough of a tradition and make us look good nationally long enough that another coach of almost as good caliber might consider coming to Auburn. But here's the problem with that. The national media as a whole and a lot of the fans hate him. Irrationally and wrongly, they hate him. Now, we know that journalists, sportscasters that he personally worked with at ESPN love him. Of course they do, right? They love him. People that he's worked in person with that have been around him, that have, you know, been have talked with him, have encountered his personality and his loyalty and his friendliness and everything, they all adore him. But the general sports media that doesn't know him personally, they put two and two together. They say, okay, Bruce Pearl is a cheater, A. Auburn is a cheating program, B. Cheating coach at cheating program. I'm going to do everything I can to minimize this, right? And so I constantly get the sense that, again, unless it's basketball commentators that know him, because they talk him up, right? The ones that know him talk him up. But all the others in the national media that cover basketball or any other sport, they're like, cheating Auburn, cheating Bruce Pearl. I'm going to minimize them. I'm going to talk bad about them. I'm going to ignore them. I'm not going to credit them for this run. And I'm just waiting for them to get on probation and him to get another show cause. That's how I view it. Am I entirely wrong, John? Straighten me out.
You're not wrong. I mean, I think he doesn't get the respect he deserves because there are people in the media who don't like him and blame him for that, some of that stuff, some of the puritanical, I think, people in the media. But I think, as I'd said, on the degrees of cheating thing, like his was a, you know, one and Will Wade's was a 90 and Will Wade's still coaching. So my level of concern about it is zero. But also, I think the other thing that your theory about Bruce Pearl and his future, and we've kind of gone off the rails here with this conversation, but your thing about Bruce Pearl and his future at Auburn and a potential, you know, building it up for replacement is, I think Bruce Pearl is very grateful to Auburn for hiring him and setting him up for success the way they did. And I think he is very aware there weren't a lot of other schools beating down his door to hire him at that point. And so I don't think he's going to leave. I think Bruce Pearl's here for a while, and I think he's going to have great success at Auburn. I think that's where we're going.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think that the very same factors that will make it hard to replace him also will make it less likely that he'll leave. So it kind of cuts both ways. And I make no apologies about bringing this up because this is generally the kind of conversation you and I have that people enjoy the most. And we get comments back about, right? If we just sit here and do the news, that's great. But if we actually have something controversial, hot takes, boy, then, you know, that's what the red meat for the masses, John. That's what we're shoveling out. But I don't feel like that was a hot take. I just feel like I feel like a lot of Auburn fans just sort of take it for granted that this is how it will be. And I feel like that's not realistic. And I would love to be wrong. I'd love for us to be, you know, the next Duke or something. That'd be fine. But I'm going to believe it when I see it. So, and you did like my Nick Saban to Missouri.
I did appreciate that was wonderful.
All right, I'm going to go ahead and delete that item that I was going to talk about anyway later. And I'm going to scroll back up here because we got to talk about A-Day. So A-Day is coming up. And man, if there's, you know, I've gotten to go to one A-Day the last 15 years since we moved up here. And the one thing that consoles me about not getting to go to A-Day anymore is knowing that A-Day isn't what it was when we used to go anymore, because it used to be a day-long event. They would have Jazz Fest in the amphitheater. The UPC, University Program Council, would bring in some really cool jazz band to play all morning for free. And then as soon as Jazz Fest was over, we would stroll across the lawn over to the stadium, to the east side of the stadium, go in and watch A-Day and maybe take food, you know, or something. And it would go, you know, till late in the afternoon. That was a day's worth of entertainment, and you're still home by supper time. So I used to love A-Day so much. But when I went back the last time, it was the year that the Alabama Book Festival had me down to talk about our Decades of Dominance book. And we just drove over to A-Day as soon as that was over. And that was the last time I went, and it just wasn't quite the same. So we'll see if maybe they get things going again. But there was some interesting quotes from Coach Harsin and others, which I'll get to in a second. But you asked a good question up front. What do we want to see at A-Day? Well, you tell me. What is it that would... Because this is a question he was asked too, is what would make you... I got the answer he gave here in a second, but he was asked, what would make you happy to see at A-Day? So what would your answer be to that? Because he had a good one.
I mean, my answer for what would make me happy at A-Day are A, no injuries.
Yes.
B, something different on offense.
Something different.
I want to see something different. I want to see some different pass routes. I want to see the... You know, Bo Nix look a little different. I want to see I want to see us do something different. I want to see us, you know, I do not want to see, and I don't care what big different, little different, whatever. I don't care. Please, I just want to see some different players.
That's right. Amen. Amen. I think we're going to see something different.
Yeah. And I'm excited. And as always with these kind of events, I'm excited to watch the young players. That's what I'm, you know, I'm excited to see all the new guys.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Well, I love what did you say? You see, Harsin's answer to that was when one of the reporters, one of the beat guys, asked him, you know, what would make you happy to have seen? And he says, I don't think I've ever been happy after a scrimmage. And that's true, right? Because he says, if the offense does something good, that means the defense didn't stop it. And if the defense does something good, that means your offense is not working right. So he said, I guess I'll be happy if special teams look good. I love that. He'll be happy if special teams look good. Because then there's really not a special teams, you know. I guess if you're practicing special teams and they block like 7 field goals in a row, you're right back in that predicament again. Have I got like the world's greatest field goal blocker, or is my offensive line protecting the kicker crap? You know, so, you know, that's one of those things you can't really know the ultimate answer to until you actually play a game. So,
yeah, I don't think they're actually going to do live opposition on special teams, so there's no chance that the other side does great. So
that's right. Well, so, and speaking of which, Anders Carlson is one of the players that's been getting probably the most I've heard praise from Harsin lately. I mean, when they say, you know, name somebody specific that's been doing well, he's like, well, Anders Carlson goes out there in a hurry, and, you know, in like the hurry up field goal practice, and he knocks it through. So that's really good to know that maybe Anders, maybe, knock on wood and everything, but maybe Anders is gearing up for a season similar to his brother's. He had a good one last year. We talked about that last episode, you know, the kickers. And so it would be really nice if he's getting ready to have a big season this year and keep that ball rolling. Another quote that Harsin had I thought was good is he says, we need to make new mistakes because we're making the old ones too much. I thought that was pretty good too. What did you think about that?
I do like that. I mean, that's, you know, I don't want to see the same mistakes. I want the players to learn and get better and improve. And so I get that 100%.
Because you know you're going to make mistakes. He just wants them to stop making the same ones over and over. Sure, yeah, absolutely. So, and everything also that I've heard so far has indicated that the defense seems to be ahead. But you know, for as long as you and I have been alive and followed football, we've always heard coaches say that the defense always starts out ahead. And honestly, you kind of want your defense to be ahead, certainly early on, right?
Sure. And this defense, again, I this defense is going to be ahead of a lot of teams we play this fall because it's really talented and really deep and really well coached. So I think they're going to be a great unit. So I'm, you know, it doesn't shock me a bit that the defense is ahead of an offense where they're still doing basic installation stuff. So.
Yeah, and they asked him about, like, Bo Nix. He said Bo is – the first thing he said is Bo is very smart. He picks things up very quickly. It's just a matter of making good decisions. And I don't remember – I don't think it was you and I that had this conversation, but somebody said to me the other day, or maybe I heard it somewhere, that a sort of a metaphor or a comparison for what they're dealing – the coach, the new staff is dealing with Bo Nix – is like somebody said this way. They said, you know, when you're going to put on your shoe, your tennis shoe, and you're getting ready to tie it and you realize it's already tied in a hard knot. So you got to spend a bunch of effort untying the bad knot before you can tie the good one. That's Bo Nix right now. So does that kind of works for me. You kind of get that?
Yeah, no, that makes sense. I buy that. And again, I think it's like the Yoda thing. You must unlearn what you have learned.
Very good. Very nice. Very good. So, yeah, I have a feeling he's doing a whole lot of it's kind of like everything that's coming out of Bo Nix and the offense right now is going into Central Florida. So we'll see. we'll see how that looks. I did watch a little bit of Gus's press conference the other day in Central Florida, and it was vintage Gus, just the same thing. So I'm hoping his optimism, you know, is warranted down there, and we'll see big things. I have to admit, I'm going to be rooting for Central Florida more than I normally would, which would be zero. So, you know, any amount would be more than I normally would. And I want him to do well. But honestly, there is a small, petty little part of me in the back of my mind that hopes that when the whole season is over, they're 8-5.
Sure. I get that. It's human.
And I'll just send a tweet of the little shrug guy, you know, the little shrug emoji to Central Florida. Let's see, anything else? We talked about the defense.
Well, we have to talk about the biggest football news.
Oh, yeah, we haven't gotten like the news. That's right. Go ahead. The biggest is it's certainly true.
J.J. Pegues is no longer a tight end. Do you have any? Do you have any like mournful music, any dirge kind of?
I had taps on here, but you didn't like that, so I took it off.
Dang it. So, okay. J.J. Pegues is no longer a tight end. He has moved to defensive tackle. And so it's a sad day for all of us who love the J.J. Pegues' tight end era and all the great moments in it. But it was not to be. These kind of fleeting, you know, sparks of joy fill our lives, and then they're gone. And but on the other side, I'll say this. J.J. Pegues is going to make a great defensive lineman. And, you know, as the Mike Felder on Twitter, whose Twitter handle is like In the Bleachers, and retweeted this and said it a couple of times, and it's really true. Because Nick Eason reached out to J.J. Pegues and his family and said, look, you're a good tight end. But if you want to make some money, you need to come over here and play defensive line. And it's the truth. Like he was, you know, he's a guy as a tight end. It's fun. It's a, you know, it's different. He could be a stud. And there is an actual direct parallel at Auburn.
I bet I know. Ooh, Mr. Carter. Okay. Mr. Carter.
Who is it?
Jay Ratliff.
Jay Ratliff was a big tight end, changed positions, became a defensive lineman, a defensive tackle, went on to have like a 10-year NFL career, very successful. And J.J. Pegues could be that guy. He has – you've seen the agility and the explosive burst. He could do it. He could step in and be an absolute stud there and a kind of a top-end player to, you know, and we – so.
But here's the question from me, though. Is there any chance we'll get a little refrigerator Perry action?
I 100% think so. I think, and one of the things that always frustrated me about Gus is that we didn't do that kind of stuff on the goal line.
Yeah.
I 100% think there's going to be a Pegues goal line package. I don't think they're going to bring him out on offense just on regular plays,
right.
But I think we're going to see a Pegues goal line package, whether And I don't think he's going to be at Wildcat. I think it's going to be Pegues, like in at, you know, at fullback or something. So, but whether he carries it or catches it, I do think there's the potential for Pegues to make some plays on offense.
I just don't want to let go of my dream of him catching a swing pass and turning upfield. And here's the funniest thing about that. The last player that did that to Alabama was the smallest guy on the team, and he did exactly what I want JJ to do. It's just that he did it from a small position. I mean, you know, it's funny. It's like you say, who on the team, if you didn't know any better, and you said who on the Auburn team would have done that, you'd probably say Pegues. And it was it was Sean Shivers, which, by the way, that's another thing to mention real quick, is that Sean Shivers, it's I saw that he had a meeting very early on with Harsin and wanted to know what his role would be in the offense. And Harsin told him, we're going to be a downhill running team, pro style. And he said he came away from it thinking that he was now in the perfect offense for him. I hope that's true. I've heard talk like that too many times in the past, and it doesn't always pan out. But he is a team captain. He has leadership and attitude out the wazoo. I would love for Shivers to really kind of go out there this year and be useful. I mean, not that he hasn't been already. He's had his moments in bits and pieces, but he's kind of the number two running back now. And
Yeah. I'd like and to on a roster with two proven running backs.
Yeah. And he's one of them. So, but I love that Harsin said that he had seen the film of that 2019 touchdown, and so he understood what he was getting in Shivers. And I think, yeah, if you need to know anything about him, you just need to watch that. And also, every time he gets the ball and he runs, I love how he's still pumping. He's still, you know, he finishes plays off.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he expends more energy after the whistle than a lot of players do between the whistles.
But also, he's not going to give up. He's going to, you know, give everything he's got. And I think he's stronger now.
Mm-hmm.
He's still a small guy, but he's very powerful. And I think, you know, I think he's only going to break more tackles this year. And I think as a, you know, a 5 to 10 carry a game compliment to Bigsby, I think he's going to be excellent. I'm excited about it.
Yeah, I agree. I had no, there's no doubt. Let's see. So did you catch anything from the other coaches talking to the media? I didn't see all of them. I just kind of bits and pieces. And I watched Harsin's comments pretty much in full. It takes 45 minutes to get through a Harsin press Gus would have been done in 12 minutes with the saying, you know, Harsin kind of expounds, but that's good. It's a breath of fresh air. But did you catch anything from the other coaches you wanted to talk about before we move on?
No, I mean, I think it was good to just hear from all the other coaches, because I think we're starting to get a picture of who they are. That was really good. What kind of people they are and why they're attracted to Auburn. It's the first time you've heard from Cadillac, and it was, you know, good to hear about kind of what he's doing. I enjoyed listening to the different coaches talk about kind of what they've seen and who they're excited about and that kind of stuff. I think we're going to be really strong on defense. And listen to the different defensive coaches. It's not changing my mind at all. I think we got a really solid group of players there, a lot of depth and talent. And, you know, we got other guys not even here yet. So, we're going to be okay on that side of the ball. That's all I'm going to say.
Oh, the other thing was that Luke Deal, the tight end Luke Deal, he described the new offense as complex and definitely difficult, which I think is a step in the right direction, maybe. Javarius Johnson said that some of the players were, quote, mind blown, unquote, by the new playbook at the start of spring. And then somebody clever on Twitter replied, in unrelated news, Central Florida players can't believe how small their new playbook is. And I was asking, the Central Florida receivers are like, I think our pages are missing. Like, no, that they're not missing. That's it. That's what you get. So good luck. And I do hope they do well as long as they're not playing us. Any other football stuff?
No, again, a day, 1 p.m. Central, 2 p.m. Eastern, Auburn Radio Network, SEC Network Plus,
okay,
whatever the heck that is. So
I've got it, I'm sure. I'm paying $8,000 a month for all this stuff. So it's got to be on there somewhere.
That's it.
Amount of money I'm paying for television stuff these days, there better not be a channel I don't have, because – I'm probably paying right now for like Belarus state television.
Listen, you know, you got to get those out of conference games somewhere. So
is now beginning broadcast day, Belarus state TV. Russia, number one. Iran, number one. Bama, number one. There you go. You know you love it, folks. You know you waited a long time for me to have an excuse to play that. Sometimes, John, this show just hangs a couple of sharp left-right turns, and we end up in Albuquerque, you know? Or Belarus. That's where it is. What, Minsk? Yes. Am I correct? Minsk is where we just were?
I think you're correct.
Please clap.
All right. All right. Weren't expecting that. Basketball. Well, we've got some news, man. We've got some real news going on. I mean, on the one hand, did I see a note today that JT Thor is gone?
It's a theory. It's not official. I mean, he did, let's be clear. He has explored the NBA draft process.
Yes.
He has not officially signed with an agent, okay? Mm-hmm. But the thinking about the other big development today is that maybe it means that he is gone.
Okay. And that, well, and I was going to say, I hate that we might lose him before I ever even get a chance to find a Thor soundbite. That would be a real tragedy.
Mm.
Real tragedy. But something probably from like Infinity War where Thor was like goofy. That would have been fun. But why is it a trade-off? Who are we bringing in? Two, actually.
Right before this podcast this evening, we learned that Auburn is getting a former five-star recruit out of Georgia, Walker Kessler,
mm-hmm.
is signing with Auburn. He originally signed with North Carolina and played there last year and then is transferred out. And there was a lot of thought he would go back to North Carolina or that he would go to Georgia. His older brother, you probably remember his older brothers played at mm-hmm. Georgia, Alec Kessler.
Oh, yeah.
And But Walker Kessler signed with Auburn. He is a 7'1" center who can play facing the basket, can shoot, can run, can, you know, get his own shot off a little bit. So
judging by his 45-second highlight video I saw this afternoon on Twitter, the young man can dunk. It was like pass to him, dunk, pass to him, dunk, turn around, dunk. He was like a dunking machine.
I mean, I guess he's a big athletic 7-foot guy. He also has some good moves around the basket, kind of it's a little turnaround jump shot and a little hook and that kind of stuff. And he's also a much more of a face the basket kind of big man who can run the, like Bruce Pearl was guys who can run the floor, space the court, you know, and then if somebody else drives to the basket, he could be standing there, get the ball, make an open shot. Or he could get set, you know, you could do a kind of a pick and roll thing with him. He could cut to the basket. Or he could be, you know, somebody else could be near, you know, in near the basket. He could pass it out to him and he could hit the open shot. So I think he could do all of those things. But in combination with our other new player, I mean, Kessler is a guy who could go up and down the floor fast.
Yeah.
He can, you know, get out on fast breaks, make stuff happen.
So, and our other new player?
Our other new player is Wendell Green Jr. From a smaller school, who signed with a mid-major out of high school. He's Wendell Green is like if you genetically combined Harper and Sharif Cooper. He's like a wow. Jared Harper, Sharif Cooper. Like again, he's like 5'11", 175.
For a muse of fire.
That
kind of, you know, but a really good passer, but also has some of that Jared Harper. I'm just going to stop out here from 30 feet and just let it go and make it happen. But, you know, he played on a team with a super high tempo, really fast, gets up and down the floor, you know, scores, sets, but really a point guard, distributes, set people up, make stuff happen. So I think he can be that guy to help trigger the offense. We played, you know, Zepp Jasper at number two mm-hmm. at the shooting guard with Trey Alexander coming off the bench behind him as a shooting guard. And then in like a starting, you know, front court as good as anybody in the country. Mm. Walker Kessler at center with, you know, brand new signee Jabari Smith at the power forward position. And again, I'll be clear, Sharif Cooper was the highest player Auburn had ever signed in basketball. And? Walker Kessler and Jabari Smith are both higher rated recruits than he is.
So both higher, yes.
So again, Alan Flanagan at the small forward, Jabari Smith at power forward, Walker Kessler at center. That's going to be as good a starting front court as anybody in college basketball. And then we got two veteran transfer guards coming in who are kind of the best players on smaller conference teams. You know, and our all-star shooting guard coming in, and this team is going to be outstanding.
All I can say to that is, although honestly, saying that Auburn has all those players, I really want to hear, because it just doesn't make sense. But yet, there it is.
It is weird, but it's also like it goes back to the discussion we had at the very beginning. This is Bruce Pearl. Bruce Pearl's out here getting guys. Kessler wanted to come to Auburn out of high school, thought about it, ended up going to North Carolina, clearly regretted his decision, transferred to Auburn. The other thing is I think this, you know, getting Wendell Green maybe a sign that Auburn's going to go back to more full up tempo. Mm-hmm. That we're going to play more wide open, more up and down the court, and because that's the kind of system he came from and he really thrives in. And we clearly got the big guys who can run now. You know, we don't have a bunch of plotters and a bunch of guys that need to stand around and jam up the offense with their back to the basket.
The team's just going to look so different next year, just completely mm-hmm. different. It's amazing. And basketball is a sport where you can just change out a handful of players and you have a completely different team. You know, football doesn't work that way, really. The closest you get to that is like losing Cam and Nick Fairley after 2010 and then comparing that team to 2011. And even then, I mean, you know, you still got most of the same players. It's basketball, though. You know, we'll have Flanagan and Cambridge and a couple of other sort of forward-type guys back. But other than that, it's going to be a different team. And again, we just have to hope that they can gel, right? I mean, that's just going to be our eternal mantra from now on under Bruce, is they just have to gel. They have to play together and get some experience working together like the 2019 team did.
But also, I think, again, Jabari Smith is a guy who could be an All-American next year, go to the NBA, right? That's theoretical. But like Wendell Green is a guy who signed with a smaller college out of high school and clearly should have, you know, had the talent and ability to play. You know, he was kind of an all-conference player as a true freshman in that league and in the Missouri Valley. So he comes to Auburn. It's a guy that still's got to prove himself, but he's an undersized, smaller guy. He's going to be here a few years. You know, I think he can hang around and develop and make stuff happen. And so some of these other guys will too. And so I do think we're putting together kind of the core of something that could be the team for a few years, and I'm excited about that.
Yeah. Oh, I hope so. I hope so. Yeah, we've been down that. We've talked about that several times before. I'm not going to go again about, you know, you need chemistry. You can't just replace the entire team every year and hope to have chemistry, because it's just not. That's why the big teams don't end up in the Final Four every year, because some years they have chemistry and some years they don't. So what is next for Auburn? I mean, what do you see is our immediate future? I mean, we'll be back in the tournament next year, surely. We'll be back in the we'll certainly be in the SEC tournament, because we won't be self-imposed, hopefully, any other imposed penalties. So, I mean, I feel like we're primed. I don't know. I mean, I feel like we're primed to make at least get in the NCAA tournament, and then you just kind of roll the dice, right?
Absolutely. No, I mean, we'll be competing for the SEC championship next year, the regular season and the conference tournament. And we should be an NCAA tournament team. So that's we had one of the youngest teams in the league in all of basketball last year. And so the guys that are back are older, more experienced. You know, they're going to put on more weight and muscle and that kind of stuff. So I think that's going to help everybody. And then you're adding some players, you know, who could really make a difference, especially offensively. You know, we didn't have a lot of guys who could shoot outside last year. We're adding some outside shooters. We're adding some scorers. And then some guards who can kind of make it happen and ignite it. And so I think you put those together, and I think we're going to be a much better scoring team, offensive team, than we were last year.
Well, last thing about basketball for tonight, I think, is we've got to say who won the tournament challenge. We do this every year. Well, we didn't do it last year, obviously, because nobody could. But every normal year or semi-normal year, I'd say this is a semi-normal year so far, we do our patrons have the opportunity. It's one of their perks. They have the opportunity to be part of our big NCAA basketball tournament challenge on our private group on ESPN. And we have a winner for the actual tournament who got the most points. And we have a winner we're going to pick tonight for who had the best name for their team. Now, the winner for the overall tournament is easy enough to determine. It was Stephen Houston, who had the name Iona Piece of History. Iona was a very popular name since they were playing Alabama in the first round. He scored 1,460 points and ended up in the 99.9 percentile. So congratulations, great job to Stephen Houston for his winning the AU Wishbone Bracket Challenge. And I got to say, the top, because of the way this thing works, the top seven out of, we had a total of 33 entrants. The top seven were the ones who picked Baylor as the champion. Let me just tell you very quickly my own story, and we'll talk about what you did real quick, and then we'll get into our crowning our winner of the name contest. I had Baylor winning, but I didn't even think about it because I didn't realize how many points you got for that one game. So after round two, I believe it was, I was in first place. And then I went all the way down to like 20-something and quit paying attention. But when Baylor won, I got maximum Final Four points and maximum in our group and maximum national championship points. And I climbed all the way up to fifth. So, ha-ha, what a comeback, right? And, John, you were down around 19th, 20th almost the whole time, and you ended up climbing all the way to 12th. So you and I both ended on a relatively high note. In fact, if you had had, let me see, if you'd had Baylor.
No, I had Gonzaga winning. If they had won, I'd have finished fifth.
Yeah, there you go, see? Yeah, exactly. You would have, that's right. And I would have finished, like, 12th, so... Isn't that funny? It really worked out interesting. Math is weird that way. So, but everybody did really well. The top eight were all in the 90-something percentile. So that's pretty cool. Okay. So our only other thing to do then, I guess, is to crown the best name. And I'm going to just go through here. We haven't really prepared for this beyond just we went through it a couple of weeks ago. So I'm going to go through and name the ones that I want to put on, and you put the ones you want to put on, and then we'll kind of whittle it down and have our own little tournament real quick. So I kind of like, there's some of them that I think are good, right? I think a lot of them are good. I Own a Piece of History is good. Don't Fly the Coop Sharif is good. Davion Mitchell Fan Club is okay. UVA Double Dribbled is a classic always with Danny Flack. Sharif Buford T. Justice is going to go on my, I mean, for reasons that those that listen to the show very often will understand, I have to include, that's not it.
What we're dealing with here is a complete lack of respect for the law.
Thank you, Coach, Sheriff. But let's see.
Look, Van, I looked them all over, and we got to call it. I think there's some other really good candidates here. I mean, yeah. I'd like to buy a Powell.
That's pretty good, Elbron Elvis. I'd like to buy a Powell. That's good. Although some would say that's what Bruce does, and then we're back in the first conversation again. No.
But I think Sharif Buford T. Justice is the best one. I think that's the winner.
All right, a couple other good ones. We have Cardwell from Three. Kumo said that. I got to give him credit for that.
War Eagle Eric's name is Oats Suck.
That's good. I Survived the TP Crisis, says David Smiley. And then there was, Pastner's COVID Pinata. I don't even understand it, but COVID Pinata is just funny to me, so I give that I give that one a thumbs up. But yeah, you want to go with Sharif Buford T. Justice?
I think it's the best one. It's so good.
What the hell is the world coming to?
Well, I keep losing my sound. Oh, so congratulations to we don't have his name. He just has an ESPN number. Congratulations, 7904648. You are our winner. All right. So we appreciate all of our, and again, Stephen Houston, great job with winning the actual tournament itself. That was great. So, yeah, we appreciate all 33 of you guys. Well, that's awesome. Guys and gals, play in the tournament with us. I always like to point out as well that we also have our Fantasy Formula One League going on. I was going to mention that at our break, but I'll go ahead and mention it now since we're talking about activities that we do for our patrons. So for as little as $1 a month, and I'm going to mention this again in a minute, you can join up and join our Fantasy Formula One League. We've only had one race so far. They've been on like a month-long break. They had the first race, and then they took like a month off, which I'm just pulling my hair out. But this coming weekend, which is like 6 days from now, our time, the second race starts. So if you want to get in on it, we've got like probably 10 or 12, 14 entrants, whatever, on the Fantasy Formula One League. After one race, Mira is dominating as usual with her Del Taco racing team. Which never ceases to amuse me. But and her Mercedes AMG Petronas is her other team. You get two teams each, right? So everybody can pick two teams. You can have one if you want or two. And you basically pick five drivers and one actual real team like Mercedes or Ferrari, you know, or Red Bull. And basically you get points for different things they do, just like fantasy football. And it's really neat. You can change out drivers every week, you know, swap one out and this, that, and the other. And you have a salary cap. So the computer does it all. It's very easy. It takes you 5 minutes to put a team together and compete with Alan. And I think Delvin has a team this year. Jared has a couple of teams. Mira, me, and several of our more racing-oriented AU Wishbone patrons. So go to www.auwishbone.com and sign up this week. And there's a link right there on the Patreon page. It'll give you the password to get in and set up your team. We'd love to see you. We would love to see you. Oh, and a couple of other people. And Richard. Yeah, Richard. Richard Stevens has a team, which is very exciting to me. So I'm very happy to see Richard on board. So I'm always glad when folks that we know that are our great patrons want to participate and do fun stuff with us. All right. So we wanted to talk about one other thing real quick. Was we did our kicker discussion last week, and you suggest we talk about kick returners. So let's go ahead and run through what we think would be like our top kick returners and top punt returners.
Yeah. And again, I don't think these have to be super deep in long discussions, but I just think we did kickers. I thought it would be fun to do kick returners before we get into other serious positions. So
yeah, absolutely. So which one you want to do first? So I'll know which page to go to here.
Let's do kickoffs and then we'll do punts.
All right. Let me see.
So again, I think the criteria are different, I think. So, and we'll talk about punt returner is different. I think with kickoff returner, what you really just want is explosiveness. You want somebody who's consistently getting you extra yards and making big plays. But also, maybe there's an element of you want somebody that's just exciting, right? Somebody that's fun to watch as a kickoff returner. You don't want somebody that's like run straight ahead and gets tackled every time.
Right. excuse me, I'm choking. It seems like we're more often in the pack, certainly with Tuberville and Gus, it seemed like we were often more likely to see our running backs returning kickoffs. Whereas with punt returner, it tended to be either a receiver or a defensive back. I don't know why that is. I guess with punt returners, you're more worried about their hands. So you pick somebody that is used to like catching the ball in the air. Whereas with kickoffs, you want you kind of assume you're going to have a little more time maybe to catch the ball. And if you don't, it goes out the back of the end zone maybe. And so you want somebody that can break tackles and get upfield, right? Because the goal is to get past the 25-yard line. If you're a kick returner and you can't get past the 25-yard line, then you really have no business being a kick returner because you're actually hurting the team, right?
It's true.
So I thought was very interesting here was that And let me see. The kickoff returns, I want to just compare it to punt. Yeah, Thomas Bailey. So, I mean, you know, just like our big revelation, at least for me last week, was that Daniel Carlson was even more dominant than I even realized. And I knew he was, you know, pretty amazing and pretty dominant. I figured he'd be up at or near the top of everything, but he was like far and away at the top of everything. Thomas Bailey, who played 2 years under Pat Dye, 91-92, and then played the first 2 years under Terry Bowden, you know, and under Terry, he was a very valuable receiver for us in big games, like the Florida game and all. He had some big catches, but he was a heck of a kick and punt returner, huh?
He was. I mean, and so we had, he was, like you said, it was a long time. He has the most kickoff returns of any player in Auburn history by a good amount. Like he has 74 kickoff returns. So as an example, like somebody that did it a lot, like Ontario McCaleb has 53.
Yeah.
So he literally had, you know, 20 more kickoff returns, 21 than McCaleb. That's a lot of kickoff returns. So I think he is a, you know, a very productive player. I think it's interesting. The player with the most total career kickoff return yardage in Auburn history is the Hall of Famer James Brooks.
James Brooks, 25 and a half yard average. Man. Well, but when we're talking about returns, though, let me throw this in. I just thought it was interesting. Robert Baker, the touchdown maker, the Coke deal maker, he's number six all time on number of kickoff returns with 46, but he only did it 2 years. So if you project him out over a four-year career, he would have actually had 300 or more yards more than Thomas Bailey had, and almost 100 returns, which had been all with like 20 more than Bailey had. So Robert Baker, if he hadn't messed himself up, was on a path to really doing something remarkable, and he even had competition on his own team from Markeith the Lizard Cooper in 96, also returning a bunch of kicks. So that is interesting to me that those two guys are 45 and 44 returns, and they were on the same team 1 year.
Yeah. So there are three on the third table on this page, there are three players in Auburn history that average more than 26 yards every time they touch the ball on a kickoff return.
Wow.
And they're all pretty recent, and it's Tristan Davis –
wow.
Trey Mason and Damon Washington, who I think may be the most underrated kickoff returner on this list.
Yeah. Yeah. He was awesome. That was that was on Chizik's first two teams, 2009 and 2010. Damon Washington played a big role on that 2010 team. We forget.
He was a weapon.
Well, he was no Herbert the Weapon Casey.
Nice.
But he was a weapon, yes. Kickoff return average. I'm going to zip down this real quick because I think there's some names here that people will enjoy hearing. In terms of kickoff return average, average yards every time they catch a kickoff and run it back. Number one, Tristan Davis, 2005 through 2008, Tuberville, Grand Central. Number two, Trey Mason. I mean, we know all of his amazing numbers as a running back, but he's our number two all-time kickoff return average. That's amazing. And just barely below. All right, Damon Washington, number three. Ricky Neal, back from the 70s. Ontario McCaleb is number five. James Brooks is number six. Kerryon Johnson is number seven. Another running back kickoffs. Corey Grant, number eight. Markeith the Lizard Cooper at number nine. And number 10 is a guy I thought was going to be much higher on this list. That would be one New York Giants star, Tim Carter. Because I've mentioned before that huge play where he ran back a 100-yard kickoff against LSU against Nick Saban in 2000. That was so glorious. They had just scored to pull within like 10 points of us. And then Tim Carter busts off a 100-yard kickoff return. So
there's something, being a great kickoff returner is a little bit like being a great home run hitter. It's the ability to pull out a big one in a big moment is a part of it, right? That's not just the average. It's can you deliver when the team needs you to deliver something?
Yeah, that's fair enough. Absolutely. That's good.
All right, so who, looking at this list, do you think are your top one or two kickoff returners in Auburn football history?
Man, going by this list, I mean Thomas Bailey for consistency, Damon Washington for kind of reliability, but I think if I want something big to happen, James Brooks looks pretty good to me.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, and that's not to shortchange Tristan Davis and Trey Mason on terms of yardage, but yeah, I mean, I just don't think you can go wrong with any of them. What do you think?
No, I agree. I think that's fair. I mean, I think I go Damon Washington, Tristan Davis, James Brooks. I think that's I'm with those three. And I like Thomas Bailey a lot, but I don't think he's as explosive as those other guys.
Right. He just kind of would pick his way up and get a couple extra yards there at the end. That's nothing wrong with that. That's good. So.
That's right.
What about punt returners?
All right. Again, it's a little bit different. I think when I think about what makes a good punt returner, it's not just the yards and making big plays. I also want reliability, right? I wish we had like muffs or drops stats for these players.
Yeah, that's true. Because
if you do that, you're dropping way down the list, right? So I think that matters. And your guy, Bailey, again, the most yards and the most returns ever as a punt returner. I think that matters. Trey Gaines on this list, a big-time punt returner.
Oh, yeah.
A guy that did it a lot. In terms of average for the most explosive, Mike Fuller from the 70s, Lionel James, number two, a great punt returner, very electric. Jimmy Carter from the 60s. Willingham from the 60s. Roderick Hood, I did not expect him to be up there.
2000 through 2002, yeah.
Carno Williams and Quan Bray, and then your guy Robert Baker. Can I tell a story about Robert Baker and punt returns?
Please.
So when in 1996, we went to see an Auburn home game against South Carolina. And my oldest child had just been born. She was, six months old, 5 months old. We went to the game, 4 months old. And so we bundled her up and we took her to the game and she fell asleep. And she was sitting on my lap asleep when Robert Baker returned a punt for a touchdown. And the crowd went bananas. And I had to sit there and be still and calm because she was asleep. And she slept through the whole crowd thing.
Wow. So. Wow. The things we do when we carry little babies to the game. At the Vanderbilt game in 08, Mira was about that age. And we were up in the deck. You didn't even know Vandy had a deck. But we were up in the deck and the sun shining on us. And I was so afraid that Mira was going to get baked by the sun, me holding her, that I held the pizza box up in front of her and block the sun for like the entire game. So you do what you got to do when you got a little kid with you, don't you?
That's right.
But I think I'm going to go, for punt returns. I mean, it's hard to go against Thomas Bailey again. I did love Trey Gaines. We got old Shane Wazin in at number three in number of returns. I always think of
Shane
them kind of together. Yeah, and then Trey Smith. Everybody remembers Trey Smith in punt returns. Remember him blocking up a block punt against Florida. And running it in for the 06 for the Pontiac game changing play of the year. So I think Bailey and Gaines are going to be my choice. Although certainly Lionel James, man, you can't go wrong with him. And that's what I want Sean Shivers to be this year.
Just for comparison purposes, people understand, like Lionel James averaged almost 16 yards a return. Okay.
Yeah.
So like. Quan Bray, Robert Baker, those kind of guys, Wasden, those guys are in like the 8-9 yards. So it's another category. So I agree. Bailey was very reliable. He was dependable as a punt returner, and I like that. And again, as I said, I value that a lot. I'd probably go him and Lionel James.
Yeah, it's amazing that Bailey, for all the punts he returned, his average is only 9.4, while Mike Fuller from the early 70s, his average is 17.7. Holy cow. That's pretty amazing. So, all right. Any other thoughts about kicking punt returners?
Just, it's like everything else. You don't know you need one until you don't have one.
Yeah, this is true. Oh, man. All right. Well, that was cool. I'm glad that we. I'm glad that you suggested that. So let me see where we are. We got to thank our patrons real quick. And by the way, I'll just let everybody know that if you're a James Bond fan, the James Bond lexicon that Alan put together, he and his wife, Jillian Porter, Alan J. Porter and Jillian Porter, they've been working on this book, I kid you not, for a decade. It's 450-something pages long, published by White Rocket, and it's got like 60 gorgeous illustrations. I mean, like, they got, I can't think of his first name, Karjabal, to come in, Pat, maybe, and do these portraits of characters, all the Bonds, the Bond girls, the vehicles and everything. These are just gorgeous, like charcoal-looking, you know, sketches, and they're beautiful. And there's all, any, you know, you turn any movie on to any moment, and as soon as they mention a thing or a person or a place, you can look it up in this book, and it talks about it. It gives you like an encyclopedia. It's like an encyclopedia of everything that's ever been in a Bond movie or comic or novel or TV show. And so all you got to do is just go to, you can go to Amazon and look for the Bond lexicon. You can go to whiterocketbooks.com, and it's featured on our main page right now. But this thing has been selling like hotcakes. We're so proud of Alan and Jillian, and I'm just really excited that this book is out. And I think if you have a loved one that's a James Bond fan, you cannot go wrong. Believe me, they will, on Christmas or their birthday, they will fall down and kiss your feet for getting them this, because they probably don't know it exists, and it's amazing. So I already talked about the things you get, some of the things you get, including getting your name called out as a patron of our program, part of the AU Wishbone family. For as little as a dollar a month, just go to www.auwishbone.com and click on the big orange button that says Become a Patron, and you too can join the family. We don't do ads on this show. You don't have to put up with ads. You just have to put up with me telling you why you should join up. Here are the folks who have made that choice and pulled that trigger so far and have do so much great things for us. They include Chris and Clinton Stewart, Carl Von Drunker, Christopher Burleson, Samuel Salvatore, and then there is Bart Lindsay, Bradley Blackman, Chris Usher, Gary Grant, Phil M. Thor, Richard Stevens, Steve Trawick, Susan Trawick, Tom Anderson, Trombone Tiger, Willie Carden, Ann Kangian, AU Falling Up, Ben Bloodworth, Clay Henson, Dan Thompson, Daniel Odom, David Evers, David Hegler, Emmanuel Seaman, George Gaston, Jacob and Robin Fleming, James Greenwell, Joel Beckham, John Otsuki, Catherine England, Kevin Smith, Mickey B, Phil Davis, Preston Settle, Reynolds Wolf, Rich Reimer, Steve Harlan, Timothy WDE Ritchie, Wes Atkinson, William Morgan, Wilson Beard, Winston Boddy. Oh, we're coming up on my favorite new thing, John. You know what it is. Winston Boddy, Alex Nguyen, Blake Heron, Boris the Tiger, Cato the Barner, Chris the Hilton. Chris is such a good sport. Colby Butler. And then we have Danny Flack, Darris Benton, David Simpson, Di Bama, and not a minute too soon, Earl Ricks, Eric Mahan, Hugh Anderson, Josh Teal, Kevin Kinoy, Kevin Mahan, Christian Thorvaldson, Lane Middleton, Melissa Blackstone, Mike Finley, Algorithm, Papa Todd, Patrick Williams, Randall Walker, Rob Morgan, Ross, Russell Milling, Sarah Hines, Sasquatch, Shane Bailey, Shannon Butson, Snowdog, Stephen Houston, Tim Pittman, Tony Perry, 76 Tiger Still Lives, Auburn Elvis, Ben Amos, Brandon Smith, Chris Como, Darren, I can't be called the pie. Darren, you're going to have to drop me an email and clear this up, because I can only read what's on there, and I'm not sure if you're telling me to do something or you're wanting me to say that. I don't want to mess you up. So, Darren, we appreciate you, but let me know what you're trying to say here. Maybe I'm just being stupid. David Smiley, Donnie Reynolds, James Taylor, Jason the Weasel Skull Albrecht, John Stubbs, John Zavachin, Joey Miller, Joseph Iliff, Justin Bean, Kathy Bright, Kenneth Brent Rains, Mark Squire, Matthew Flowers, Mick Vijakana, Paul Bankson, Public Land Owner, Robert Drain, Russell Souther, Ruth and Darren Sutherland, that's the truth, Ruth, Spanky, Stephen Thompson, Trevor Johnson, Weagle87, Brant Rumble, Chris, plus our one-time and our anonymous donors. We thank you all. Go to www.auwishbone.com. AAUSN.com. And now we have a new segment of Guess the Game from Jared. It's everybody's favorite new segment of our show. We've had a good time with this the last several weeks. By the way, as I'm opening this up, I will point out that Andy Fix and I have started doing a Babylon 5 bi-weekly podcast, starting with the very first episode, the Gathering movie. That went up this morning, covering The Gathering and the first two episodes of the first season. And every 2 weeks, we're going to review probably about three episodes. So if you want to follow along with us, the show Babylon 5 is currently on HBO Max. They've remastered it. So just go to HBO Max and watch the show. And then tune in on Wednesday. Well, I need a few times. Later in the week, every 2 weeks, we will be posting it at a regular time. So, and now, here comes... Who can it be
now? Hello, Van, John, the rest of the AU Wishbone family. This is Jared Albrick, the yard sale artist, a.k.a. the Death Probe, here with Guess the Game number 8. As usual, I'm at Yard Sale Artist. If any of the listeners out there want to suggest a play for Guess the Game, it's at Yard Sale Artist, Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. And you know what? Let's just get to it.
This is absolutely bizarre. And it gets even more bizarre. Could this be returned for 2 points? We'll take it back. And it gets crazier and
can you talk about an emotional roller coaster right now? Is on one as well as
there you have it, Van and John. Ooh, a little bit tougher this time, perhaps. I don't know. You guys have been getting them pretty fast lately, so we've ratcheted up the toughness. Good luck.
All right. The first thing I got to say, John, is I love it. I love it. I love it. But it always makes me laugh the first time he puts the bleep in, because I always think the announcer has started cussing. I just instantly assume he's like, and he's running the ball back and bleep. Kills me. All right. I'm
on an emotional roller coaster, man.
Well, we're Auburn fans. That's our normal state, right? But I have a couple of thoughts about this, but I really am not sure at all. This is, to me, the hardest one yet. And I like that. Jared, you're doing great. I like that. I like hard. I like it difficult. But I just want to say this. On the one hand, the one time I remember, and clearly that was Auburn scoring, okay, running back an extra point for 2 points the other way in apparently a crazy game. The only time off the top of my head I remember that happening for Auburn was the 1997 SEC championship game against Tennessee, which is why we ended up with 29 instead of 27. But I think Jared said, I may be wrong, I think he said he was only going to use games that we won. But he may have said he's only going to use plays that Auburn does something on. So it may be that a loss is fair game if Auburn's doing something good in the play. You know what I mean? So I can't rule that game out entirely until I remember exactly or clarify it with Jared. So that's all I've got. What have you got?
I mean, I remember Auburn doing this, but I honestly am not sure what game it happened in. So I'm going to say this. I do not believe those sounded like the announcers in the SEC championship game.
Yeah, I was. And see, I was also going to say that sounded like Carl Stevens in the background. You could kind of hear. But then I'm like, so maybe it was at the Georgia Dome. But then I thought Carl Stevens used to be the announcer for every SEC championship game because he was so awesome. That'd be, I believe, Richard's dad, right? So. And everybody loved him. So it's just I may be talking myself in a circle here. I don't want to have to go to the this has got to be only like the first or second time we've had to go to the hints, right? Without a clue.
Sure.
I just feel like there was another game where we ran back a blocked extra point. Maybe like an Arkansas game or something when crazy stuff happens. Because it wasn't too that didn't sound like a Florida State 84 or anything. That sounded recent to me.
No. Yeah, that's much more recent than that.
Yeah. Oh, all right. Jared, you did great because you're making us have to go to the hint file. So let me click on the hint file from Jared.
Okay, here we are in the unbleeped hint file. So let's go ahead and give that a listen.
This is absolutely bizarre. And it gets even more bizarre. Could this be returned for 2 points? DeMond Washington will take it back. And it gets crazier and crazier.
Talk about an emotional roller coaster right now. Houston Nutt is on one, as well as Gene Chizik.
All right.
All right. I have all the confidence in the world that you've gotten it by now, so let's hear those confident answers.
All right. There's only two possible teams it could be.
Yes. It's 2009 or 2010.
It's either Arkansas or Ole Miss. And if it's Gene Chizik, it's probably not Arkansas, right? It's probably Ole Miss.
Petrino was at Arkansas, though.
Yeah, Petrino was at Arkansas. He had moved on to Ole Miss. I think that's right.
Yes. This is Houston Nutt at Ole Miss before Coach O, maybe. So, or after Coach O and before the next person. So, Houston Nutt was at Ole Miss. Petrino was at Arkansas.
Before Freeze.
Let's back up. In 2010, when we played Arkansas, was definitely there.
Petrino was there, yes.
Yeah, and Freeze was at Ole Miss. So it was an Ole Miss game, and it sounded like a home game, right?
It did sound like a home game, yes.
So which year did we play them at home?
Odd number.
We played them on the road in 10 because Cam caught the pass.
Yes, that's exactly what I was thinking. You were reading my mind. So it's either 9 or 11. If it's Gene Chizik, it's 9 or 11.
Okay, but we just looked at the kick return statistics, and I don't think DeMond Washington was returning kicks on the team. I think he was gone. I think he had to be 9.
Well, but this wasn't a return. This was a block.
I don't think he was on the field. I think he was gone by 11.
All right, so you feel like not. I can't remember the 09 Ole Miss game. That's probably a good sign for it being the right one. 09, I basically remember West Virginia and Alabama.
Mm-hmm.
That's pretty much my memory of. Oh, and Northwestern. That's pretty much my memory of 09 or those three games. So,
I remember the first game. Maybe was it Utah State or anyhow. Keep going.
Let's just go ahead and put all our chips on the table for 09 Ole Miss.
Yes.
You good with that?
Yes.
All right, Jared, you did a great job this time. You made us really have to work for this. If we got it right, it's miracle because we had to use all of our Sherlock Holmes of football deductive powers. Here we go.
All right, Van and John, if you decided that this was Auburn playing Ole Miss in 2009, you're absolutely correct. And I got to tell you guys, the 2009 Auburn Ole Miss game, the third quarter is just bonkers, and it is so much fun to watch. So any listeners out there, I highly recommend you head out to YouTube, check out 2009 Auburn Ole Miss. First half is, a little sleepy, but man, that second half, especially that third quarter, is just a blast to watch. So this one was a fun one. I hope you guys got it. Once again, I'm at Yard Sale Artist. If any listeners want to suggest a play for Guess the Game, Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, it's all at Yard Sale Artist. Back to you, Van and John. War Eagle.
Great job, Jared. And remember, if you suggest a game for him, he prefers games that there's like actual video of or audio available. Don't tell him like, the 63 Texas game. No, he would like ones he can actually find some material for. So, but that would be awesome if you guys help him. So, yeah, this was my favorite one yet because we really had to. We got it. But it took the hints, and we still had to work it out.
Yep.
So I pat us both on the back for that. I think that we both did a really good job there.
Nice work.
All right. I think that all that remains then is for me to push the fabled aqua blue button.
Thank you. Order questions to the Prime Minister. It's time for listener questions. Dun, dun, dun. On the AU Wishbone podcast.
All right. And I this is like the coolest thing that Jared came up with. I didn't tell him to do this, or you didn't tell him to do this. He just thought it would be a neat thing, and he was absolutely right, and I really appreciate it. So what do we got in the mailbag this week, John?
All right. First question is from AU Falling Up.
Yep.
Who says, good evening, AU Wishbone. Which group do you think will make the most improvement out of the spring game? Offense, defense, or special teams? Thank you guys for all that you do.
Oh, well, we appreciate you very much, and we appreciate you not saying, stop pronouncing my name that way. that's what I always worry about when our patrons write in, is they're going to say, now, look, you got to quit making, you know, I just try to make them interesting. I think that the defense should be good. I think they would have been good regardless, and the special teams too. So I honestly at least hope that our offense can make an improvement from never having seen this offense before to being somewhat mastering of it by the time we play. What do you think?
That's fair.
Because they're kind of starting from zero. The defense is like, you know, changing some terminology, changing some formations and stuff. But I feel like the offense's change is there. I feel like they're coming from a deeper hole.
Yeah, there's more room for improvement. I think, you know, and it's also some of the other things. Like if the defense suddenly had a great pass rush, I would be excited, but I'd also be scared.
Yeah. Well, as Harsin said, I mean, you're never happy after when one side dominates, you're like really worried about the other side. I remember an A-Day game back in like the Terry Bowden or the Tuberville early era, where in the spring game, the defense just absolutely dominated. And so they tried to spin it and say, oh, our defense is going to be like the best one in college football. And it was very average and the offense was terrible. So, you know, you can spin it, but you have to hope that they're good. All right. What else we got?
All right. Our next question is from Cato L. Barnor, who wrote us into auwishbone@gmail.com. And he said, I heard one of your comments and been seeing it online some, but I was curious how people are coming to the conclusion that Auburn athletics are failing due to Alan Green. Correct me if I'm wrong, but to my knowledge, Green hasn't hired any of the coaches in the sports that are tanking right now. Softball, Mickey Dean was hired by – he says Mickey Dean was hired by Jacobs. Baseball, Butch Jones hired by Jacobs. I'm not positive about that one. Gymnastics was hired by Jacobs. Swimming and diving, one head coach has hired under Green. Another been here 19 years. And he says, and no, I'm not counting Harsin or Harris among coaches who are failures because they haven't played a game yet. The only involvement with the tanky sports where you attribute to Green are not firing the coaches previously, but before this year, they'd all been in trending down territory and not really fireable territory. This is the first bad year, and unfortunately, they're all happening at once. And to be fair to Jacobs, I still think all of the above are great coaches who will do good things in the long run. He says, with the exception of one coach, the softball coach, fire Mickey Dean, cough, cough. I'm hoping this is just one bad year. Long question short, what's the logic behind the idea that Alan Green is the reason the sports are doing poorly when he didn't hire the coach? And I agree, like, with his point. It's very fair. I don't think we said that. I think, you know, ADs get all the blame and none of the credit for a lot of this kind of stuff. And so, no, I don't hold him accountable for coaches he didn't hire.
I said that I saw somebody say it and I was startled by it. And I asked you what you thought about it. And you said it was ridiculous. And I said, all right, there we go.
Yeah.
Speaking of new coaches, though, we have to mention we did hire a new one. We have Johnny Harris coming in as our new women's basketball coach. I'm very excited about that. She seems very cool. She seems very tough and in charge and kind of knows what she wants to do. And I really look forward to our women's team hopefully getting back to the heights. In fact, I don't know if she even realized. She said that Auburn's, you know, teams have a history of winning the SEC and even getting to the Final Four. And I'm like, we went to the national championship game 3 years in a row. So yeah, we've been to the Final Four. They used to be, you know, they used to be unstoppable, except unless you were freaking Tennessee, unfortunately, back then with you know, the greatest coach ever. So I'm really looking forward to Coach Harris coming in and maybe getting things going again. That would be great.
Yeah, and she came in and, like a lot of great coaches, said, you know, what has she got to do? And she said, recruit, basically.
Yeah, absolutely. And she says, play defense. She says she loves playing defense and that really good players playing really good defense goes a long way. And I don't think there's any sport that would argue that. So
it's true.
Anything else?
All right. A couple more emails here. This is from Clay Henson, who says, now that J.J. Pegues has changed to the defensive line, can he change his name to something Van can pronounce? And he says, thanks, you guys do your great job.
I tried to remember, it's like pig and geese. Look at that pig and those geese. Pegues. See, my problem is, John, that I'm always looking at letters and words and names and breaking them down and everything, and I see his name spelled out, and I try to pronounce it the way it looks, and I'm trying to stop doing that and just start thinking of it the way everybody says it. That's not the way I normally do it. I mean, like, the reason I was always able to spell Obamanu and Aromashadu when I seemed like all our, even our beat reporters would misspell their names all the time is because I would memorize the spelling. But when I memorize Pig Geese's spelling, I get it wrong. I overthink it. You just got to go with the pig and the geese, Pig Geese. You can't overthink it. There you get in that trap. So there you go.
My phonetic pronunciation lessons from Van there.
That's it, man. Get extra bonus material tonight.
All right, and our last email question this evening is from Auburn Elvis, friend of the podcast.
Yes, sir.
Who says, hey, guys, I don't have a question. I just want to say that the price of getting all those really good basketball players is Van saying, I sure wish these players would stick around in every episode. I can live with that.
That's just pretty much. I mean, I'm a broken record about some things, but it would be nice that if we had. Oh, I mean, somebody pointed out that we got our great player last year that went on to the NBA in the first round.
Okoro,
and then we got Sharif because he wanted to play with Okoro. Okoro was already gone. And now we're getting, Jabari Davis, because he wanted to play with Sharif, and Sharif is gone. So we've got a pipeline of players coming in who wanted to play together, and we only have 1 year of each of them. So what are you going to do, you know? I mean, that's just the nature of having a one-and-done string coming in.
That's it.
I can still remember when this used to be a controversial thing. Remember when Georgia Tech got Stephon Marbury, and there was much hand-wringing and pearl-clutching about would he stick around for more than 1 year? No.
Yeah.
The answer was no.
I do remember that. And I mean, I remember when high school players went straight to the NBA.
Yeah.
So, I'm not worried about that at all. There's a player in this upcoming draft who almost signed with Auburn and then a couple years ago and then went to the G League or whatever, and he would have been a top 10 player, and that's a guy we didn't even sign that would have been a high school American or whatever. So,
absolutely.
You know, Bruce, the bottom line is Bruce Pearl's doing a great job. He's bringing in tons of talent, the most talent we've ever had by an enormous amount.
Enormous.
And it should make basketball fun to watch for years to come.
You think about some of the, and bless their heart, we love them. They were Auburn players, and we cheered for them and love them. But you think about the caliber of some of our starting lineups in fairly recent years. You know, those guys wouldn't have even gotten a scholarship offer from this team.
They would not have broken the playing rotation. You are correct.
No, it's amazing. It's absolutely amazing. There's a handful of players I can think of in our recent past that might have been on one of these teams and gotten some playing time, but not many. It's amazing. All right, any other questions? Is that it?
That's it.
Yeah, this was a fun show tonight. I had a lot of fun tonight. I think that we both brought some energy. We both had some stuff we wanted to talk about, and I think it went pretty well. I don't think we have any around the SEC of any note, do we?
Nah.
No, I think we're good, and we're still crossing our fingers that the road trip will materialize. So the more of you guys that join up the Patreon and help us to file away, stash away the ability to do that, the better. We'd appreciate it. We're going to get a video camera if we can do it, and we'll get all the equipment we need, and we'll be able to do all that. So, I mean, if the dang cloth map guys that go around doing documentaries on 1980s video games, if they can have a huge Patreon, we can get a couple more people to sign up. Come on now. Come on, man. Come on.
Come on. Come on, man.
All right. Well, we're good. Otherwise, I think that we're good for tonight. Any last thoughts, John?
Georgia still sucks.
that's old reliable.
You know what? The last time Georgia won a national championship was closer in time to World War II than it was to now.
Oh, that's good. That is, and we do have facts to back that up in Georgia.
Blame yourself.
There you go. On that note, I think it's time for us to get on out of here. Our time is up. We thank you for yours. We really thank you for yours tonight. War Eagle, John.
War Eagle, man.
Thanks for listening to the AU Wishbone. Find links to everything we do at www.auwishbone.com. For more Auburn fun, join us on Twitter at @AUWishbone and at facebook.com/AUWishbone. War Eagle.
The AU Wishbone is produced by Van Allen Plexico and John Ringer. Copyright 2020.
This has been a White Rocket Entertainment production.
Thank you for listening to the AU Wishbone podcast.